just to kind of give you an overview of what I'm thinking, and then you can tell me if this won't work. Today, I'm planning on getting through chapters 24 and 25, and we'll see how far if we actually get there. But when we get to the end of chapter 25, I'm going to stop, because all of chapter 26 is Paul in front of one of the kings, and we really need to deal with that as a chunk. So my suggestion is that we deal with chapter 26 next week, and just chapter 26. So it may be a shorter session than usual, but that we just tackle chapter 26 next week, and that then the week after, we probably will finish Acts because it's Paul in Rome. So how does that sound?
Are we going to meet next week?
I was planning on it unless you all don't want to. Well, that's kind of where I am.
The most London thing we can do. Mission Friday.
Well, a lot of the reason I cancel Holy Week services is that we usually have one service right after another, but they're all kind of being recorded and posted this year, so Holy Week isn't as... It's not that it isn't as stressful, it's just that it doesn't take as much concentrated time. So, so there we are. Linda, or Gigi dropped off. I'm imagining she's going to join us again. She's probably rebooting her computer. So, okay. So grab your Bible and find chapter 24 in Acts, because that's where we're picking up. So just to remind you where we left off last week, Paul had been basically spirited out of Jerusalem by the tribune of Jerusalem and taken to the governor in Caesarea. So that's where we're picking up. And so Paul is now having a hearing before the governor. So that's what we're reading about in chapter 24. And the governor's name is Felix. And it's a long chunk, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. So we're starting at the beginning of chapter 24. All right. So Gigi, we're at the beginning of chapter 24. If you're joining along, okay? So, 5 days later, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and an attorney and a certain Tertullus, and they reported their case against Paul to the governor. When Paul had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, "Your Excellency, because of you we have long enjoyed peace, and reforms have been made for this people because of your foresight. We welcome this in every way and everywhere with utmost gratitude. But to detain you no further, I beg you to hear us briefly with your customary graciousness. We have in fact found this man a pestilent fellow, an agitator among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to profane the temple, so we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to learn from him concerning everything of which we accuse him." The Jews also joined in the charge by asserting that all of this was true. So here they are. They're making their charge against Paul. They've come down from Jerusalem to Caesarea. And notice that politics haven't changed very much.
I was just thinking that.
So they start with buttering him up. You know, "You're doing such a good job. You've made our lives so good. And we don't really want to take your time with this small matter. But troublemaker, you know, deal with him. It could almost have come out of today's paper. So that's the charge. So now it's Paul's turn to speak. So Paul says, and I'm picking up at verse 10, if you've lost the place.
Right.
When Paul motioned him to speak, when the governor motioned him to speak, Paul said, "I cheerfully make my defense, knowing that for many years you have been a judge over this nation. As you can find out, it is not more than 12 days since I went up to worship in Jerusalem. They did not find me disputing with anyone in the temple or stirring up a crowd either in the synagogues or throughout the city. Neither can they prove to you the charge that they now bring against me. But this I admit to you, that according to the way which they call a sect, I worship the God of our ancestors, believing everything laid down according to the law or written in the prophets. I have a hope in God, a hope that they themselves also accept, that there will be a resurrection of both the righteous and the unrighteous. Therefore, I do my best always to have a clear conscience towards God and all people. Now, after some years, I came to bring alms to my nation and to offer sacrifices. While I was doing this, they found me in the temple, completing the rite of purification, without any crowd or disturbance. But there were some Jews from Asia. They ought to be here before you to make an accusation if they have anything against me. Or let these men here tell what crime they had found when I stood before the council. Unless it was this one sentence that I called out while standing before them, it is about the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you today. But Felix, who was rather well informed about the way, adjourned the hearing with the comment, When Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case. Then he ordered the centurion to keep him in custody, but to let him have some liberty and not to prevent any of his friends from taking care of his needs." So Paul makes his defense, which is basically, hey, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was just following the law and the prophets like I've always done. I do follow the way, but I wasn't making disturbance. It's not my fault. And oh, by the way, if they thought I was, the person who's accusing me, who really saw the fight start, should be here. So he's making a couple of arguments. One of, there's nothing in this. And the other of, there's a form problem here, that the right accuser isn't here. So the governor says, I want to hear from my officer, the guy I left in charge of Jerusalem. So when he gets here, I'll make my decision. But for now, I'm going to keep you in custody, but we're going to treat you well. All right?
I'm just catching up with you. What chapter and verse are you on?
24, and we just finished reading through chapter 20, through verse 23.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that's the trial before the governor so far. Now we have more to hear from him. But any questions, comments?
It's an interesting defense. I did nothing. Mm-hmm. But bring the guy who saw me doing nothing, and he'll tell you.
That's right. That's right. I didn't do it, but even if I did, you need to have the right witness of what I did here.
Right. I didn't do it, but there was a witness.
Yes, exactly.
So they don't let him out on bond.
No. No, this governor is actually pretty smart. He's like, I'm going to keep a hold of you. I'm going to treat you well because you're a citizen. So, you know, I'm not going to give you anything to complain about, but I want to hear from my guy. I've heard from the Jewish leaders. I've heard from you. I want to hear from my guy, my officer. Right?
Which, so the main complaint would be that he's not keeping the peace. I mean, the Romans...
Yes.
In Jesus' case, but they said, this is an issue with us.
That's right.
You know, we wash our hands of this. But in this case, they feel they do have
right.
an issue.
Right.
With,
Right. The accusation is, what the accusation the Jewish leaders bring is, this guy's disturbing the peace, which is a Roman issue. Paul's defense is, I wasn't disturbing the peace. Our argument is about our faith, which you don't care about. And so part of the reason I think the governor calls for the tribune is, the question at issue is Paul disturbing the peace? And the governor can't figure that out from that. Gigi, you're raising your hand.
Let me get back to this point about that. The Romans did not care about the religion.
Right.
Is that true?
That's true.
What they were doing, as long as it was not disturbing the equilibrium, the rule that they were trying to maintain.
That's right. The Romans don't care who's right or wrong in the religious fight. They only care if the peace is being disturbed.
And there was...
Sorry, Gigi, you froze up again.
All religions at that time?
No.
There is complete freedom?
No.
Religion?
No.
Okay.
The way the Romans were able to conquer such a huge territory is that their religion is polytheistic, right? You all remember this from elementary school, reading all the Roman myths. So they have all of these gods. So one of the things the Romans were really good at is, when they conquered a people, finding one of their gods that they could morph so that the conquered peoples could find a place in the Roman pantheon that their god was.
Okay.
The only people they conquered that didn't work with was the Jews.
Right.
Because the Jews are not polytheistic, right? They are monotheistic, and it's not okay for their god to be one among many. Their god is their god. They can't worship other gods and their god. They can only worship their god. So the deal...
Is that the only monotheistic group at the time?
In the bounds of the Roman Empire, it is the only group. It's not necessarily the only monotheistic group, but it's the only group who is exclusively monotheistic, if that makes sense. It's the only group for whom it's not, you know... There were other tribes they conquered who were monotheistic, but they were okay with their god being one of a pantheon. They just only worshipped their god. It didn't bother them that the Romans had other gods.
Okay.
We're just going to do our thing.
Can you give us an example of that?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
Fair enough. Were the Persians and the Zoroastrians category?
The Persian Empire at this point, I'm not sure if it was monotheistic. I think they were duotheistic. I think they had two gods, and they were quite comfortable having their gods. They found a place for their gods within the Roman pantheon. It didn't bother them to have the Roman gods also, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
And certainly the Egyptians, who the Romans have conquered, this is not an issue for them. They are already polytheistic. What is stuck in my head, and I can't get the details out of it, is there were some tribes in the Germanic lands when the Romans conquered them that were monotheistic. But again, they were comfortable with their god being one of the pantheon. They just made their offerings only to their gods. And the Romans said, fine, whatever. You know, that's your version of Mars, right? I mean, the reason that we have Greek gods and Roman gods that are the same but have different names is... Because, when the Romans conquered the Greeks, who were the first ones they conquered, they're like, oh, yeah, Zeus, we get him, that's Jupiter. Yeah, you know, those are the same. They weren't actually the same at the beginning, but they merged, right? And the Romans were kind of flexible that way. The issue for the Jews is that they are completely and only monotheistic. The other thing that's happening at this time that makes this all more contentious is that at some point, the Roman Empire emperors decided that they might be gods too. And if you, you know, if you watched I, Claudius or some of these things, you might remember this, that where the Roman Empire said, you know, I'm a god. I can be a god. I'm the most powerful person on earth. And so the Roman emperors get added to the pantheon of gods. Now, again, for people for whom, for the peoples for whom having a pantheon of gods isn't a problem, that isn't a problem. Sure, you want to be a god? Go for it. Join the pantheon, that's fine. For the Jews, for a person to claim to be a god is kind of the highest heresy there is. So it's really important for the Jews that they keep their privilege to worship only their god. Because this is getting, shit's getting weird over here, pardon my French, right? And
a little tricky.
Yeah. And that's not something they could accept. So, and the Romans don't really want to go to the trouble of destroying these people. That takes a lot of effort. You know, it costs a lot of money to move enough soldiers in to destroy people. And you destroy them. So then who's going to work the land there? Who's going to, you know, pay the taxes? So, yeah, Linda.
Well, would the Jews have been, I mean, the Romans been keeping up with the story of Jesus and how Paul relates to that? And was this a growing concern for them at that point? Because at some point the Jews are in the being eaten by the lions. I mean, at some point the Jews became enough of a worry that they were destroying them. Are they keeping up with
it? They are keeping up with it. And you notice that because in verse 22 it says, but Felix, who was rather well informed about the way. So probably not the emperor at this point, but certainly the officials in the area are keeping they're keeping their ears to the ground. Gigi and then Sue.
This is after the crucifixion.
Oh, sure.
I mean, there already was the disturbance. You're right. They said the Romans certainly were aware of that disturbance that happened when they crucified Jesus. I mean, that was all a big disturbance, right?
Sure, but it wasn't a major disturbance. That was just, I mean, and it was 30 years ago at this point, you know. It was a, you know, oh, look, there was a riot. And, you know, on their Jewish festival day, the then governor had two criminals to release to them, and they called for the murderer and executed a zealot. 20 years on, 25 years on, you know, but because
it's big in our minds, but it was a little incident,
right?
In that whole density of people and polytheism and all of that.
Yeah, it might not have even made it. The crucifixion of Jesus probably wouldn't even have made it into Pilate's report to his superiors. It just wasn't a big enough deal. You know, he would have written to his superiors, the Jews had their festival, I released a criminal for them, as is the custom. You know.
Yeah.
10 o'clock and all's well. Sue, did you have a question?
No, I was just going to say, but now they're collecting foot soldiers and a lot more than anticipated.
Yes.
So
yes, now...
attention.
That's right. As the way, which is what they still call Christianity, right? As the way grows, as more and more people, and there've been more disturbances. Remember, everywhere Paul went, there was trouble. So there was a riot in Ephesus, and there was a riot in Corinth, and those are not small towns, right? So a riot in Ephesus gets some attention, because that's a center of commerce. A riot in Corinth gets some attention, because that's a principal city.
Right, and a port, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't Corinth
a port? Yes, Corinth was a port. So, you know, now this has moved from this little religious dispute in this backwater of the empire. It's raised itself in more important cities. So thoughtful and well-prepared government leaders are now beginning to have it on their radar screen.
Right.
Okay.
Peggy?
Yeah.
When Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," is this the same way that he was referring to?
Yes, that's why they called it the way.
Way.
Because Jesus said, "I am the way."
Right.
Followers of the way. Right?
Got it.
So the early Christians didn't call themselves Christians for about a couple of hundred years. And again, because as we've talked about, there's a lot of debate still about whether is following Jesus just a different way of being a Jew? Or is following Jesus something different altogether? Or is it both at the same time?
Right.
You know, it's not clear at this moment in time, when Paul's standing there, that following Jesus is something separate from being a Jew, or something entirely separate from being a Jew.
Doesn't Christ, the word Christ, mean Savior? And if that's so, until they accepted as a difference from Judaism, they wouldn't be called Christians, because that wasn't his name.
That's right.
Jesus was his name.
That's right. That's right. Now, he was called the Christ, even in his lifetime. And we see that in a couple of places in the Gospels where they say, the Jesus who is called the Christ. Right?
Yes. Forgot.
But he doesn't claim it for himself. It's Jesus who is called the Christ, not Jesus who calls himself the Christ.
Right.
The title Jesus gives to himself most frequently is Son of Man.
Right.
So, all right, let's pick up. I'm picking up at verse 24 of chapter 24, and we're going to keep going. But, I'm sorry, 24. Some days later, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him speak concerning faith in Christ Jesus. And as he discussed justice, self-control, and the coming judgment, Felix became frightened and said, "Go away for the present. When I have an opportunity, I will send for you." At the same time, he hoped that money would be given him by Paul, and for that reason he used to send for him very often and converse with him. After 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and since he wanted to grant the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison.
Wow.
So this is not a short stay in Caesarea, right? And notice that Felix has ulterior motives. He's hoping that some of this money that Paul has collected will flow into his coffers. So he keeps sending for him and asking him questions. His term ends, and a new governor takes his place, and the new governor wants to make points with the Jewish leaders, so he keeps Paul in prison. Probably, and I have to admit, my detailed knowledge of Roman law is slight, But I think I remember that when a governorship changed, any prisoner who hadn't had a case proved against them was supposed to be released. So Paul's case hasn't been proved. So I believe he should have been released when Festus became governor. But Festus wants to make points with the Jewish leaders and so keeps hold of Paul. Yes, Linda.
There's one point, I don't know if your reading was the same. In my book, it says Felix became frightened. Does yours say the same thing?
And yes.
Was he more like a Pontius Pilate, frightened of the power that was being talked about? Was he frightened of the problems that Paul could cause? Was he uncomfortable with the afterlife? And what was his fright?
The connotation of the passage is he's been hearing Paul speak about his faith for all this time. And it says, the coming judgment is the phrase right before that. So that he's coming to believe what Paul's saying, but he's not willing to become a Christian. So he's frightened of the judgment he might face from the God that he's coming to believe is God,
okay,
but that he's not willing to commit to.
Okay.
So... okay, I'm going to keep going, and we're going to meet Festus now. 3 days after, I'm beginning at chapter 25. 3 days after Festus had arrived in the province, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the chief priests and the leaders of the Jews gave him a report against Paul. They appealed to him and requested as a favor to them and they requested as a favor to them against Paul to have him transferred to Jerusalem. They were, in fact, planning an ambush to kill him along the way. Festus replied that Paul was being kept at Caesarea, and that he himself intended to go there shortly. So he said, "Let those of you who have authority come down with me, and if there is anything wrong about the man, let them accuse him." After he had stayed among them not more than 8 or 10 days, he went down to Caesarea. The next day, he took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. When he arrived, the Jews who had gone down from Jerusalem surrounded him, bringing many serious charges against him, which they could not prove. Paul said in his defense, "I have in no way committed an offense against the law of the Jews, or against the temple, or against the emperor." But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, asked Paul, "Do you wish to go to Jerusalem and be tried there before me on these charges?" Paul said, "I am appealing to the emperor's tribunal. This is where I should be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you very well know. Now, if I am in the wrong and have committed something for which I deserve to die, I am not trying to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can turn me over to them. I appeal to the emperor." Then Festus, after he had conferred with his council, replied, "You have appealed to the emperor. To the emperor you will go." So Festus is trying to make points with the people he's newly appointed to govern. The Jews have this plot that get him sent to Jerusalem, we'll ambush him on the way, this will be the end of it. Paul says, "I'm a citizen of Rome. You know that they don't have any religious charges against me. I demand my case be heard by the emperor himself, as is my right as a citizen."
And that means he goes to Rome?
That means he goes to Rome. So Festus says, "Sure thing. That's what you want? May God give you joy of it." So Gigi?
Do we think that Paul is bringing the case before Caesar because he thinks, well, a couple things. He can get a broader audience of what he's been doing, and also he'd have a better chance against the Romans?
I'm not sure. he's appealing to Caesar because he just wants out of this cycle, right? He doesn't trust this new governor who seems to be wanting to curry points with the Jews. But when Festus says, you have appealed to the emperor you shall go, going from Caesarea to Rome is not an easy thing.
Yeah, huge thing.
Huge thing. He could, you know, Paul could die on the road, the soldiers could kill him on the road once they're out of anybody's sight. He could have a shipwreck, and in fact he does, and we'll hear about that later. Any number of things could happen to you on the way to Rome. That's a huge big deal. So being asked to be sent to Rome is not, this isn't the easy way out. This is a big deal. But remember earlier in Acts, we heard Paul say that he had always wanted to visit Rome. So there may be a piece of that in there too. Of
one way to get there.
Hey. Yeah, you know. So anyway.
What happens to this little group? They wanted to ambush him on the way to Jerusalem.
We don't hear anything about them again. Because Paul doesn't end up going to Jerusalem, right? He ends up going to Rome. So, and I imagine that maybe the Jewish authorities are just a little bit relieved by this, because Rome is completely the other direction from Jerusalem. So he's going to go away, and you know, I'm not sure that they don't think that, well, good, the emperor will just take care of him and he won't bother us again. No.
Somebody else's problem.
That's right.
Yeah. That has not changed.
You don't know about that.
Absolutely. All right. So, we're going to get a new character in the story, which is King Agrippa. So we have Felix, who is the governor of the province, but King Agrippa, who is Herod's successor. Felix and then Festus are the governor of a province. Herod has been made, and now Agrippa, have been made king over the region. So Festus is a governor under King Herod, but it's kind of a weird system. Because King Herod has the government of the region, but the governors of the little provinces report directly to Rome. So the king is over the whole region, but the governors don't necessarily report to him. They're kind of parallel authorities. And there's always a little bit of a tug of war between the king and the governors.
Not Jewish.
No. Linda.
Who's the emperor?
Who's the emperor at this point? Oh my gosh. I don't know the answer to that question, but I'll look it up and I'll know next week.
Good answer.
All right. So I'm picking up at verse 13. And I'm going to read till the end of verse 27. So settle in. Here we go. After several days had passed, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea to welcome Festus. Since they were staying there for several days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a man here who was left in prison by Felix. When I was in Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me about him and asked for a sentence against him. I told them that it was not the custom of Romans to hand over anyone before the accused had met the accusers face to face and had been given an opportunity to make a defense against the charge. So when they met here, I lost no time, but on the next day took my seat on the tribunal and ordered the man to be brought. When the accusers stood up, they did not charge him with any of the crimes that I was expecting. Instead, they had certain points of disagreement with him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus, who had died but whom Paul asserted to be alive. Since I was at a loss how to investigate these questions, I asked whether he wished to go to Jerusalem and be tried there on these charges. But when Paul had appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of his imperial majesty, I ordered him to be held until I could send him to the emperor. Agrippa said to Festus, "I would like to hear the man myself." "Tomorrow," he said, "you will hear him. So on the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp, and they entered the audience hall with the military tribunes and the prominent men of the city. Then Festus gave the order, and Paul was brought in. And Festus said, "King Agrippa and all here present with us, see this man about whom the whole Jewish community petitioned me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had done nothing deserving death. When he appealed to his imperial majesty, I decided to send him, but I have nothing definite to write to our sovereign about him. Therefore, I have brought him before all of you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner without indicating the charges against him." So here's Paul, and he is, and here's Festus being very sneaky. So King Agrippa has come to welcome the new governor, and Festus says, "You know what? I'm going to get your name involved in this." So he lays the whole case before Agrippa and says, "I don't even know what I'd write to the emperor about what we should charge this guy with. It's just a little religious dispute among these Jews. What do you think?" And Agrippa says, you know, "Hey, let me hear him. I want to hear what this is about." So I'm just looking up who was the Roman emperor. This would be about 58. Okay, Claudius. Nero Claudius. So Nero is the emperor. Is that right? That doesn't sound right. Hang on. I know Nero is the emperor when Paul dies. I'm not sure if he's still the emperor then.
Nero?
Yeah, Nero. He would have been, yeah, because he came to the throne in 54 AD and ruled until 68 AD. So he would have been the emperor at this time. So that says more about Festus, because Nero is mentally unstable, I think, is the most polite way to refer to Nero. And so sending him, you know, spending the money to send this prisoner all the way to Rome to appear before him with nothing really to charge him with, maybe not the best political move for Festus. So he's trying to get it to be Agrippa's fault. Agrippa wants to know what's going on. Yeah, Linda.
So he said, "Therefore, I have brought him before all of you."
Mm-hmm.
So who's all of you?
The council. He's got his council of advisors with him, and probably some of the kind of high muckety mucks of Caesarea. Caesarea was both a center of government and kind of a vacation place. So there probably would have been some Roman officials, you know, hanging out there for the seaside and the sun and came for the entertainment. So.
No.
These are, I mean, the Jewish leaders are there probably, but because King Agrippa's come down and they would want to be in touch with him. But no, not specifically. The all y'all is Festus's council and the people who've come with King Agrippa and other people who might have been hanging out in Caesarea. So, that's where we're going to stop. because the next chunk that picks up and is basically all of chapter 26 is Paul's defense of himself and his faith before King Agrippa. And this is one of the parts of scripture that is kind of the clearest description of Paul's conversion and the change of his mind, and it's in his own words. So we will read that chunk and talk about it next week. Yeah, Linda.
Is it true that at the time there were other men like Jesus who
I didn't hear the end of the question. I think you have two devices on and I'm getting an echo.
I know, but I don't know how to turn one off without.
Okay. Just ask the question again.
Were there other men who arose and with the following who claimed to be some kind of religious leader?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. This is this time in what we would call the Holy Land is kind of the age of zealots. Just about every other year, different zealots arise and gather disciples around them and proclaim, you know, versions of faith and have followings, and then they basically just, you know, they rise up and the government pushes them down and their followers disappear. It's kind of like zealot whack-a-mole that the Romans are playing right now. You know, one pops up and they pound it down, and another one pops up over here and they pound him down, and another one pops up over here and they pound him down. What makes, at this point, Paul unique and the way of Jesus unique is that they executed the zealot, Jesus. But Jesus' followers haven't disappeared into the woodwork. In fact, the movement is growing.
Right.
And the movement of Jesus has spread beyond Jerusalem, Caesarea, Palestine to principal cities in the empire, to Ephesus and Corinth and Thessalonica and some of these cities that the emperor would have heard of. Right?
Can I interrupt a minute?
Yeah.
Periodically during this last hour, I've been getting a green signal with a phone in it, and it says the phone number is 462-9899.
That's Sue. That's Sue. When it pops up, Sue called in rather than turned in on her computer, and so when she's speaking, that's what you see.
So it happened periodically, so that's what it was.
Yeah.
But then I'm getting this other little message, too, and it says iPad, and then two in parentheses, and then it says Linda Ryan.
Yeah, Linda's logged on twice.
I have two things going. Okay. So, sorry. Is that something I need to follow up
on? No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, good.
No.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So they have, so far, not determined anything. This Agrippa and company have not determined anything to accuse Paul of, correct?
No, not yet. They haven't heard from him. So that's what we're going to hear next week. Is
why would they need to hear from him if they don't have anything to accuse him of? Don't they have to do that first?
Oh, no. No, not under Roman law. Having somebody complain against you is enough for the king to have to hear your defense. So the Jews have complained against him.
Okay, what was their complaint again?
That he was disturbing the peace.
Oh, okay.
So
The Jews that are complaining against him that want to get rid of him.
Yes.
Okay.
In those days, all there was verbal.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Didn't have anything else.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. So next week, 10:00, we will hear Paul's defense of himself before King Agrippa, and that's all we'll do next week. And then the week after, we'll pick up the journey to Rome. Okay? Sound like a plan?
Thank you. Have a wonderful week. Thank you.
You guys too.
Everybody,
see you all. See you.
Everybody's okay?
Yeah.
Bye-bye. By the way, are you okay? Is everything okay with you?
As far as I can tell.
Okay, good. Okay.
drink. And I'll see y'all next week.
Okay. Okay.